Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotalk Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 120 for August 20th, 2012. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Enger.
And holding up this table leg, I'm Joe Steinkamp.
A lot of 20s in what you just said.
I was going to say, how many 20s can we say in one sentence? I don't
one
know.
Sentence, yeah.
I didn't even see that coming until I started speaking. I was like, whoa.
Where did all that come from?
Exactly.
2020. That's better than 2020 somehow. Yeah. 2020
well,
and
did
three,
the year 2525
or something.
So it's,
yeah,
it's
he
all
did
possible.
Actually.
Yeah, made me go look that song up. Doggone it.
So on the heels of last week's big story about the Matt Honan hack, we have an article to kick off this week's podcast that talks about the fact that the cloud is still the safest place to be for small to medium businesses. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's assuming that anywhere is safe. You know, there are some good points here, like what happens if you're doing all this stuff on site, who do you hire to do all that? A lot of small and medium-sized businesses aren't going to have somebody whose exclusive job is security and maintenance. They're going to stick somebody else with that. Like, okay, you can work three jobs and get paid for one. And Woo-hoo. That means that, you know, your patches might not get applied. And, well, I was working on that other thing, so I forgot to back up. Sorry we lost, like, everything. And, of course, the other advantage, or one of the other advantages of the cloud, is that it is off-site. So if something happens to your business itself, you know, the roof caves in or whatever, then your data is actually elsewhere. And that, of
and
course,
we were,
assumes that
we
nothing
here
happens
for the,
to
the
big
the
data
big conversation
center.
Last week about iCloud. Real quick, what Apple's equipment did with Matt Honan's situation, the equipment worked fine. I mean, that it did what it was designed to do. It was the social aspect that kind of got you in trouble. And there was a great conversation on MacBreak Weekly just recently. Like, by the time you hear this, if you hear it in the first week of release, it's last week's MacBreak Weekly, in which they said that iCloud is not a backup service. Carbonite is a backup service, but, you know, iCloud is a syncing service. And so if you remove something off of one device and you have them all daisy chained to each other, you're going to remove that off of all devices. And that's the way it's designed. And so you still have to think of offsite storage like this is recommending on a hard drive and a, if you're, you know, that inclined, a hard drive and a safety deposit box that you update once a month, or burning lots of disks, you know, like a whole plethora of DVDs if you have lots of files.
Yeah, you'd have the truck full of DVDs. This is all my data.
The offline YouTube ability and putting it in the ground. But, you know, Office 365, I think, changed this for small businesses. And I think there's a lot of opportunities there through services like this or Outlook.com and certainly through mobile devices, because you need to get to that data. If you do put it somewhere, how do you get to it?
Yeah, and I'm not thinking of iCloud in terms of small or medium businesses. I'm thinking more, say,
Azure.
Amazon EC2 or something. Yeah, Azure. People use that.
yeah. Then there's Azure. Right, yeah. But I think it was interesting because IBM kind of went over to RIM last week and said, hey, we may not want to do anything more with clouds. We may want to roll our own. And so your situation may actually work out best for us because we can control our data. And that's really what this is about. Where's my data? How can I get to my data? Is my data safe? Who do I trust? Where do I put my data? If something should go wrong, where do I put my data? And so this article kind of goes over why that works a little better for someone in a small business, because it gives them a lot of flexibility versus a larger corporation like IBM who wants to be able to keep all their trade secrets behind their own walls.
And again, if you missed last week's podcast, go back, check it out. 119, we link to Security Today, which is a great
Steve Gibson reads
podcast.
That and goes through it
yes,
bit
it
by
was.
Bit by bit and scares you to death with which what works and what doesn't work, and two-factor authentication. That podcast has gone for many, many years. So if you want to know really how things are secure or insecure, listen to Security Now over at Twit TV, because Steve Gibson truly knows a lot about that.
So, Joe, if you are producing a television show and your show is on Netflix, how do you feel about the change that's being made to Netflix where if a person wants to, they can skip the closing credits?
The ability to do this kicked in on Xbox, actually. When you get to the end of a show, it actually takes your video and puts it up to the top left corner and then immediately has a button at the bottom, which you can either use with Kinect or click on it with your controller to go to the next episode. You just literally just jump. And so I'm not surprised to see this connectivity going to the mainstream app and others. I am one of those that enjoys staying after the film and listening to the score. I enjoy, you know, when Stargate took their beautiful score and Sci-Fi said, you know, we can get a minute's more commercials if we cut that down to 15 seconds. It was like a, you know, stab in the arm, because it was like, no, that's a wonderful score. And it's terrible because that's all part of the experience. But there's a large number of people who the minute they see the credits, okay, I'm done. Gotta go. And, you know, short attention span theater. It bothers me because there are sometimes hundreds of people that work on a television show or movie, and you forget who they are, unless you're, I guess, into the business or you read on IMDb. And being a, you know, guy who used to sell home theater, it just crushes me when you see that. But I understand the reason for it. So while I am not a huge fan of this, you know, it's no different than someone just closing, you know, clicking X and moving on. And there are a whole bunch of sighted individuals who talk on some of my podcasts about how they watch a television show at the top left corner of their Mac while they're doing something else. And they occasionally just look over there when they hear something new
or bizarre.
Something they want to look at, but they just have it there for white noise. And I concentrate on whenever's, you know, if I'm in a movie or a TV show, then turn off the phones. Don't call me. Don't knock on my door. You know, it's new series of Doctor Who. Everyone must go away for at least 45 minutes.
Well, from a selfish perspective, I really like this because I never experienced the credits anyway. And normally I'm not watching movies on Netflix. I'm watching episodes back to back.
She watches all these Hoarders and episodes.
I've heard.
Ice Road Truckers, you know.
You're right. I've heard the closing theme music so many times, and I just want to get to the next episode. And it does work with Netflix that if you stop it, you know, before this change happened, if you stop it right at the end, I guess there's like 15 seconds or whatever, and then it'll show next episode when you go back. So that has worked, but still, I like the thought of just diving right into the next episode. I wish I could fast forward through the beginning music after I've heard it.
There used to be a chapter stop on the Xbox, right? So you could actually sort of jump ahead maybe 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, things like that. So it kind of mimicked the DVD. So you could actually do that. But here lately, they've gotten rid of it. So I've thought about that as well. I mean, it's like, okay, I love the opening credits. Done. And you don't have the way to kind of sort of jump ahead. In fact, on iOS, the scrubber is so weird now on Netflix. It's very strange on how that works.
No, it doesn't work at all for me.
I have to turn VoiceOver off and move my finger.
I can move the scrubber, but it doesn't actually fast-forward
or anything.
Yeah.
So. Very strange.
Yeah. Along with that story, we have an article about YouTube. Kind of the fact that YouTube is more like a cable channel almost than what it used to be. It kind of started out where you just have these random things that you could watch, people falling down or whatever, playing with their baby. And now it's become, people have YouTube channels. Now, I have to confess, when I watch YouTube, I tend to surf for specific things. I have something very definite that I want.
Yeah, me too.
I do not like look at the front page to see what's hot and what's the most popular thing at the time.
No, I don't do any of that either. My son, though, does. He will want to look at game stuff.
Cat videos.
And you might want to see. Cat videos. Oh, yes. He does that, too. Oh, he's all into Nyan Cat. So the Nyan Cat channel with all of these different Nyan Cat things is really great for him because it's just video after video, nothing but Nyan all the time.
So in a YouTube channel, do the videos play one after the other, or do you need to select what you want to watch?
In a channel, they'll just continue. So no user intervention required. You start this channel and you sit there and stuff your face with snack food and drool at the TV.
Wow. When they changed it from 15 minutes to, I think it's like an hour or longer now per clip. That kind of sort of led you in that direction. And then certain personalities like Felicia Day from the Guild has shows now that are literally her podcast network, her television network, if you will. She has a show with her and Will Wheaton doing tabletop games. And there's also The Nerdist who does his own shows and things like Twit. So really, these internet personalities have done shows that would probably not fly on regular cable, although that's hard to believe since there's like 500 channels of garbage lately on cable.
Yeah, like what does it take to be on cable?
Rural TV is one of my favorites.
Bad,
Tractor Today.
And then we'll put you on cable.
There's nothing like Tractor Today. That's a great show. And I'm not kidding, folks. That actually is a show. It follows My Friend Flicka repeats on Rural TV.
I didn't know I was pregnant.
That's a wonderful show.
And a lot of people are afflicted somehow.
Yeah. Well, Sweets, 16 and Pregnant brought on Teen Mom, the spinoff, which is, thank you, MTV. Mediocre television, somewhere in the 90s, I think it was changed. So YouTube taking these internet sensations, giving them the platform to package themselves and literally do niche programming, it slowly is becoming a cable network.
And then, of course, with more things becoming internet-enabled, it's easy to watch pretty much anywhere you are. Your wristwatch, your, wearable.
My speedometer has TV in it now.
Good! How could I possibly miss that?
My wife and I were going somewhere yesterday. There was a guy texting on his motorcycle. I was like, that can't be.
That's not be good. Smart.
She said, if I hit the brakes right now, he'd be in our back window and he wouldn't have a clue.
But the last tweet.
He's typing, I'm about to crash, lol.
Yeah. Yeah.
Red lights.
BRB going to the ER.
Exactly. AFK. It's a slow news week, everybody. I'm just saying.
It is. It absolutely is. It's so slow that we're going to talk about the Kindle, shall we?
Thank
you, Jamie. Can we please?
A 10-inch Kindle,
Amazon,
nonetheless.
We love you. We actually don't.
Because the Kindle DX went on sale and nobody bought that either.
Yeah. No.
Well, but there are other 10-inch tablets, so now we got to do this again. And this is so weird. It's like tablet glut. There are
better than
thousands of
glut.
Billions of tablets, and they're all 7-inch, 10-inch, 5-point-whatever-inch phablet.
Please
When are they going to come out with the 8.2-inch tablet?
Please, Android could do that. Be quiet. Stop.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, we in Android land have the 5.2-inch phone. Come on, it's so strange. I get that everybody's kind of trying to find what fits in a cargo pants short pocket or, what feels comfortable to hold. Certainly for those who are low vision or in denial about having low vision, my parents, that they might have a better time on a larger screen. But a 10-inch tablet may be too large to carry with you from place to place. So a lot of people seem to be thinking that 7-inch is the sweet spot for these, cheaper tablets. It's very interesting, but certainly Kindle has to refresh. The hardware was very low when it came out on the original Fire. So Android tablets have, become these multi-core, octo-core kind of gigantic things. So this is keeping up with the Joneses. And the Kindle name is very popular, and it sells well for Amazon. So it doesn't mean that it's a bad idea. It'll sell to a certain crowd. But the Nexus 7 is kind of changing the whole perspective in it. $199 for an 8 GB tablet. That's pretty cool.
Yep.
Yeah, that you can read books and do all this other stuff on
a Kindle app
as well. It's right. So it kind of makes me wonder how the Kindle plans to differentiate itself when you have these cheaper Android tablets. Are they going to do something with the display? Because that is one thing that the cheaper tablets don't really shine with. Or maybe they shine too much because there's glare. I don't know.
Yeah, there's but that the, too. The but it's a race to the bottom this Christmas, because you're going to have Surface, you're going to have Kindle, you're going to have whatever Apple is working on. If the rumor is to be truly believed that they have a smaller iPad or a larger iPod Touch coming, and you still have the Nexus, which jumped out ahead of everything. So there's so many. I think you hit it right. I think it's tablet glut. And I think the thing this fall will be how cheap is it at Walmart, and better yet, on January 1st, how cheaper will it be at Walmart when it's in the clearance aisle?
Yeah, I just picked up my tablet for $149. That's $1.49.
Came with a box of Tide.
Well, in case you thought we were kidding about a slow news week, our next article, Real Player for Android Exits Beta.
Really? Why?
I think I just heard like two people in the world cheer. They're the only ones who care.
Yeah. I thought Real Player was just living off their patents. They're actually actively coding. I totally missed that.
Mm.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the last time I listened to Real Audio. I can't think that far back.
I can send you over my Real Player G2 disc if you need it. I found it in a box when I moved.
Yeah.
Came with the AOL channel.
Wow. Yeah, I don't believe they're still trying, but bless your hearts. I hope somebody downloads that.
No. If a format collapses in the forest, is there anyone there to download it?
Yeah, there's somebody at the Google Play Store looking. Hey, we're up to 8 downloads.
Yeah.
8.
Refresh, refresh, refresh. Oh my God. When we get to 15, dude, we are going to Starbucks.
That's right. Double latte, man.
That's right.
Double.
Oh, my goodness. Well, maybe it's just as inaccessible as Winamp. Hooray.
Yeah, no kidding. One reason why it's such a quiet news week is because Microsoft isn't talking. They're not talking about the Surface. And that's got people concerned, all up in arms. They announced it.
We're not going to tell you how much it is.
Right.
We're not going to tell you, you know, what you can or should be developing for it.
Yeah.
You just have to wait.
Yeah, if you're a developer, you just need to just chill.
Or, just well, you out. Can't go to Build, because the new Build conference in October already sold out. That thing sold out in like less than an hour, a couple of thousand people, where Microsoft is expected to talk a lot about Xbox whatever's next, because there's a new Xbox next year, Surface, Windows 8, Windows 8 RT, Server, Office 2013, and a partridge in a pear tree. So there's a lot going on at Microsoft all at one time. And so there's so much going on that people are starting to wonder, well, okay, if this is in play, what does this mean? And Microsoft's taking a page from the Apple book, right? They're waiting, they're going to control the message, and they're going to come out and say stuff right when they think it's best to come out and say stuff. And so, I mean, that's kind of why we've had such a big run of news since June, really, if you think about it. Last week of May, Microsoft stole the spotlight and talked a whole bunch about Windows 8 before WWDC, and then off to the races we were with news, 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 news. So the fact that people are probably on vacation before their kids go back into school is probably why we have a slow news week. But also, is just the time for Microsoft to talk about Windows 8 since it went to RTM and it's been released to TechNet and MSDN subscribers?
Well, someone who isn't being quiet, apparently, is RIM. They are talking about licensing their OS to other handsets because no one's making their phones anymore, right? I think we covered that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
So they got to do something with this new operating system. So, but it's interesting.
Whenever it comes out.
Yeah, when it comes out, right? Because they're going to wait till it's the best that it can be before they release it. So that may be next year.
We're not dead yet.
No, we're not.
You'll be stone dead. No. I keep coming back to Monty Python and the Holy Grail. You know, this is one of those things where they've got to do something. And
yep.
certainly,
I agree.
Maybe licensing things out, as I talked about before, Sega licensed their stuff when they stopped making hardware. When they stopped making the Dreamcast, they licensed out their games onto other systems. And it did really well for them. The company existed. It kept itself from falling apart. I think this is where
they're at. But RIM isn't even saying they're going to. They're just saying
you
can if we want to.
I think a lot of that's just throwing it out there. Hey, any buyers? Any takers?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't want to really look desperate or anything.
I changed my status on Facebook to single.
To
hello?
Nice.
Are you guys out there? But Acer, Samsung, you put like a device out for everybody. You have all sorts
you
of
like
stuff
us,
out
right?
there, you know? There's no operating system
we're
gonna be on.
We're really cute. Check us out.
Got my hair done.
Take you out, show you good time.
Got the nails.
Put the software on there.
So you really hardcore Apple fans, you guys and gals thought Apple was gonna be the light at the end of the tunnel for our slow news week, right? Think again. We have some of the most depressing Apple stories I think I've ever seen this week.
Oh, seriously.
Beginning with a bunch of layoffs of new hires.
And then the Apple chief comes out and says, maybe that was a bad idea.
What handwriting on the wall are they seeing? That's my question.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And the timing is just bizarre, too, because they're going to be, hopefully, selling a lot of stuff in September. But a lot of these new hires, you know, they're either laying them off before their training period is even complete. Yeah. So it's almost like plans changed in some strange way. Okay, we're going to hire a bunch of people and start training them. And all right, see ya. You know, we're kind of done. I know you're not finished training, but you're out.
Well,
and then they had some employees that were going to be promoted and they were promoted, actually, but they never got their pay raise, and now they're going to be back doing what they were doing before?
Yeah, mm-hmm. they did a 180 again. This is kind of like that whole green thing when they got away from the green thing and said, you know, oh, we're not going to follow the standard that we kind of helped set to be a green company. And then they backtracked and said, no, wait, we didn't mean that. And the same thing is happening here where the retail chief came out and said, well, okay, maybe that was a bad thing. Maybe we shouldn't have done that. And you're welcome to come back. All of you people that we pretty much said go away. You can come
kicked
home
out
now.
On the street.
I've been watching a lot of Bloomberg and paying attention to a little bit about the supply side in China and with other things that are going on. Apple is, like we see with the Samsung case, Apple is doubling down. They are actually building forts. Because if you think about this, iOS is everything. They don't sell enough Macs to keep doors open. You know, Macs are not making them tons of money. iOS is. As we talked about before, they sold, you know, more iOS devices last year than 28 years of Mac sales combined. So what happens is that you have more competition now. Some 6 years into the iPhone's life, you know, Android is not horrible for sighted users. Okay, I'll curtail that. Whether you like that as a blind user or not, that's not a question here. But sighted individuals are looking for something new and different. And the Samsung Galaxy 3 has already sold 10 million in 2 months. It is a very popular phone. Andy Anako on Mac Break Weekly talked about pulling out the phone and having six people, you know, ooh, is that the new Samsung? Ooh, I want to play with that. Ooh, that's the new hotness. So,
and then you got Windows Phone coming.
Yeah. So you have trends that change over time. And there was an article I saw this week, I think I retweeted from TripleClick, is Apple becoming boring? Because they have a set, set of time where this is the new iPhone, this is the new iPad. They become predictable. And so if you don't iterate enough, then if you don't make a something that looks visually stunning every single time, then at some point your users are like, and I mean, that's not to say Apple's going belly up tomorrow and nobody's going to buy the new iPhone or any of that. That has nothing to do with it. But you hit a saturation point in the United States. So you've sold as many iPhones as you possibly can to people in the United States. Now you got to go after the world. Well, the world is really dominated by Nokia and Samsung. And that's really tough for them. So.
And people do judge a book by its cover. This article that you're talking about Apple being in danger of being boring, was sort of an interesting article because it talked about first Apple comes out with the iPhone and it basically is a game changer and really kind of sparks the obsession with touchscreens. But there's another article that talks about how Apple is, you know, they rarely make a change in design just for the sake of making a change in design. So you'll see something that works, and then you'll just see evolutionary changes from then on. The iPhone 4 looks like the 4S, which will probably look a lot like the 5, except the 5 will be bigger. So,
and a 9-pin dock connector.
It's mm-hmm. Yes. But as far as aesthetics, you know, it's going to look pretty much the same. So is this going to be, you know, will Apple still maintain their hold on this market despite the fact that it may look shiny, but it doesn't look all new and different and so on? How much are users going
to
care about this?
And you have to think also, when someone goes to the store to buy a phone, when my wife went to buy her Galaxy 3, the guy at the Verizon store said, look, you know a little bit about technology, this phone's going to be great for you. But if you didn't know anything about technology, I'd push you towards the iPhone. And he said, you know, you're a girl, so I changed my spiel up halfway through selling you, because I know that you know enough about Android and you have questions. And she said, well, you know, my husband uses an Android phone, so I'm familiar with it. He goes, great. He said, otherwise, I would have pushed the iPhone, because generally women don't have, and of course, this is anecdotal, take it with a grain of salt.
Right.
But this is what the guy in a Verizon store would say. You know, you're dumb, so here's your iPhone, you know.
That's just, okay, I'm just again, moving quickly onward. Well,
but again, if he's getting a higher commission on Galaxy 3 this month, he's going to push that too. So we have to remember here that some people get their information from the phone stores. They go in to purchase a new phone, like Best Buy or somewhere like that. Radio Shack, God help you, buying a phone there. So sometimes it comes down to how the pitch is, and if the commercial was neat, and if it all kind of rolls together. For us, it breaks down to, is that phone have enough features on us to use it accessibly with VoiceOver or TalkBack or what have you? But for sighted individuals, my wife's new Samsung S3 is pretty tough. It does some amazing, crazy things. It's complicated as all get out. I had to go to like YouTube and watch videos to figure out half of what it did. But, you know, once when you get it down, it's wonderful. Now, mind you, it has a home button, a physical home button at the bottom, and two capacitive buttons on the left and the right, one for menu and one for search and stuff like that. And in this Samsung case here where the judge says, look, you guys should just settle this out of court. This is getting ridiculous. Yeah. I can see why Apple's very upset about the Galaxy 3. I really, really can, and why they tried to block it. Because now that I'm playing with my wife's phone, it is like an iPhone, but it isn't. But it's enough so that I guess you would be, you know, in the right frame of mind to say, hey, look, you're this is everything to us. Samsung, you make refrigerators. Go away.
Right. Yeah. But the judge is telling them, come on, guys, get together, get the CEOs together, you know, lock them in a room, make them talk this thing out. We're really kind of sick of all this. We can continue to go way deep into this, but I would really rather be done with it. You guys go talk and, you know, figure something out, okay?
So what could Apple really do?
It's hard to say because it's...
Well, that was said about Lion.
We won't know until it happens.
Mountain Lion was, how many ways can you make an operating system exciting? Right. It's,
well, that's just it. And that's what Microsoft is trying to do, is make Windows exciting.
By honking everyone off in the process. Just, we made it exciting.
Yes.
We gave you something to talk about.
Yes, they have. For sure. But, you know, for Apple is known for hardware, and I don't know what else they're going to possibly make.
Right.
You know, you've got touchscreens. If they make the phone read your mind, that would be pretty pretty much a game changer, I think.
This is why I don't like the 7-inch iPad idea, because it isn't that different than an iPod Touch.
There's nothing new or...
It makes very little sense.
Yeah, it's an iPod Maxi.
Yeah, oh, they don't... Oh, that was actually said that they didn't want that for obvious reasons to call it a Maxi iPad. But anyway, moving away from that, you know, at the price that... You know, they're not going to come at $199, or at least I will be very shocked and bewildered if Apple comes out with a $199 7-inch non-retina tablet. Because at that point, it literally is, you know, the iPod Touch. So, you know, do you get rid of the existing line? Will you price point it? If so, you degrade the experience, because for the last year, you've been telling me either through the iPhone 4S or the new, you know, $2,200 up MacBook Pros, Retina is the future. But if you give me a device that doesn't have that, that seems just cross-messaging. And it just doesn't seem like Apple to get down in the trenches and battle it out with people. It feels very wrong to me. So,
do you not buy the argument in the article that we have that talks about the 7-inch iPad might be built with an iBook reader? Or as an ebook reader, rather.
Oh, they could very well do that. This is an interesting article.
I like
article,
this idea better.
The Kindle worked at this size, so let's build this thing as an iBook reader. Plus, look at all the other iPad apps that you can have on it. And I can kind of see this spin, but again, you got Kindle making a bigger reader, mm-hmm. and now Apple's going to make a smaller one. It's just somebody decide what to do and stick with it. I think all of these tablets for every possible size and application, it's becoming a little tiresome.
Agreed. Finally, in Apple news, we have the article about some computers stolen from Steve Jobs' home. If you, Ricky, and you, Joe, were asked to give a one-word response to this article, what would that one word response be? They did not know that was coming at all.
No.
They did not have a clue.
Idiot, but I want to use the word
idiotic.
Dumb
yeah.
with another word behind it. Because that was just...
I think I'm going to steal stuff from somebody's house that has tracking enabled on the devices. You know, like Steve Jobs wouldn't have turned on Find My Mac or
Well, the guy didn't know it was Steve Jobs and admitted that, holy crap, if I knew this, I wouldn't have done
it. Didn't?
Right.
He didn't.
But because it had actually been a rash of thefts in the area, and it just so happened to be that house's turn. But good gravy, after the whole thing with Matt, And the iCloud thing, if you don't think that they can't figure that out the minute it lights back up on the net, there you go, kids. And it was like instantaneous. Cupertino was like pinging. Aha! Let's go over
it's
here.
It's on, and you're surrounded. Thanks for playing.
Put up your hands, please. No, my word was sad. And the reason is because for Steve's family, they talked about his wallet having a dollar in it. That to me is just like, I mean, it's not even been a year since his death, or just real close to it, and then to have that their home
something
violated,
like that so, to happen.
Yeah,
and they've probably had such a hard time maintaining their privacy in the first place.
But there were people second guessing. If you read the Steve Jobs book, another thing that we quote often on this program, he really wanted his children to not grow up with the trappings of some of the Silicon Valley elite. So, you know, he had a normal home and he didn't have, you know, tons of walls and he didn't have ridiculous amounts of security. He lived a normal life and that's the way he wanted his family to live. And, you know, to be fair, he had an extremely great run, you know, that hadn't happened sooner as you know, charismatic and public as he was. So it was amazing that it didn't happen. But I was kind of depressed at some tech pundits who said, well, you know, he should have done this and he shouldn't have. No, that was what he did for his family. And you know, unfortunately, it happens to all of us. Why should they be any different? Sad. I agree with you. Sad. But, you know, he felt like his children would benefit from that. And, you know, it's a lot of that stuff should have been archived. I understand the families. And here I am doing the same thing I just said about tech pundits. But in a lot of cases, you know, that's your decision of whether that needs to be historically archived or not. But it would have been neat to be able to do some of that.
They probably had other things to think about. I mean, Steve left such a legacy and was so admired by so many people. But to his family, he was a husband, he was a father, and you can't necessarily blame them for not saying,
I was being hypocritical.
Make sure that the public gets a piece of it.
I was being very hypocritical there for a moment. I mean, you know, you can't have your cake and eat it too, but you know, I understand. I mean, it makes a lot of sense, and you know, you want the reminders and all of that. It meant a lot to them as well. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff that sometimes just unfortunately happens, and this is just one of those where hopefully people realize after seeing something like this not to grab that iMac, you know, because it may have the ability to grab home. And certainly that's one of the great things about the story with Matt Honan last week was if you wanted to wipe out everything you could, if you were afraid that your data would get lost or something like that. So I think, again, it's good and bad where the technology does what the technology's supposed to do. It's the people that are flawed. Believe it or not, we actually do have real news to talk about, real assistive technology news. So you want to stay with us? We promise it does get more interesting, really, honestly, because we still have the mailbag and roundabout, and you'll never know what's going to happen in roundabout till you get there. So stay tuned to the Sarah Talk podcast.
Looking for a cross-platform solution to quickly convert printed materials and PDFs into text, MP3, or DAISY formats? Check out Cerotech's DocuScan Plus. For just $299, use DocuScan Plus on your Windows or Mac computer. Store documents in the cloud for easy retrieval and access them from anywhere. For more information, visit www.docuscanplus.com.
Check out my new time machine.
Does it work?
Hit the button.
Hey, it's Napoleon.
Oui.
Check out the future.
Hey, you have a nice house. Why don't I?
You didn't save any money, buddy.
If only there was a way I could go back in time and fix that.
Yeah.
Save something for the future. Put away a few bucks, feel like a million bucks. For free ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's
feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
And we're back on Sarah Talk 120. And I don't think we've talked about Apple enough.
No.
Let's do some assistive technology news for the Mac. Turns out there's a screen reader for the Mac.
Really?
No, no, not VoiceOver. Oh. Nope.
Hmm.
This is Claro Read for the Mac. And this is apparently based on a product called Claro Read for Windows. And I will confess to not being entirely sure where this is going to fit in the assistive technology arsenal. This, basically what this does is can read virtually any text on the screen. It does work with Microsoft Word for the Mac, which VoiceOver does not. It also works with Pages, and you can scan and OCR things with it, but it's sort of being billed as a screen reader. And given that there's already a screen reader for the Mac with some highlighting features and other low vision things such as Zoom available as well, again, I'm not seeing where this fits. Do you guys have any thoughts?
It's a wee bit pricey. What is it like?
Yeah, it's like $280. Yeah.
It's even more than a DAISY reader for Mac.
Let me be clear that I don't have a problem with there being another screen reader for the Mac.
Right.
If a third party wants to do that, that's great. But if you're doing this, it's going to have to do something that the out-of-the-box solution doesn't take care of. So if you want people to pay $280, there'd better be a good reason for that, and you should be able to do something beyond using Microsoft Word. that you can't do with VoiceOver.
Yeah.
Better Chrome support.
And okay, so this thing does actually scan things. So it does do scan and OCR. But if you want that, why not get Cerotech's DocuScan Plus so that you can store all your documents in the cloud and look at them on Windows?
Exactly. Or accessibility anywhere where you can have it for up to $21.95 a month or $240 a year. Learn more by clicking on the link in the show notes.
Not that we're into self-promotion or anything, but I'm just saying.
Slow news week.
So we have an article here talking about iOS or Android for the visually impaired. We've done this once, and we're going to do it again.
The argument continues.
Yes. The only thing in this whole article that I saw that even caught my attention was the lack of being able to auto-read, which, you know, I don't know that.
That's a pretty serious thing, I gotta say.
Yep.
If you're a screen reader, you need to be able to have a read from here command.
Yep.
You can do some of that, some of the updates to Jelly Bean. The big difference here is that Jelly Bean changes a lot. As I've said on this and that Android show, thatandroidshow.com, Jelly Bean came out a little earlier than everybody expected. It was a welcome surprise. It's a wonderful thing. But they're still tweaking it, and they're still doing things. In fact, Google Access has been very good about talking about some of the changes to Google Maps, and there are some changes to accessibility preferences during the week that we record this. So the neat thing is that Android can change tomorrow. It literally can have updates and do things in the server side, and you're not really sure that wow, it didn't work yesterday, but now it does. Woohoo, thank you, Google. iOS, you have to wait.
Yeah.
Until iOS 6. If there's any major bug, if there's any major problem, if you're having a big issue or you're waiting for support, you've got to wait till the next major release of iOS. And that is something that I think separates things. Also, for low vision people, you've got to, like I said earlier, make that decision about, do you want a bigger screen? Certainly when I moved from the 3.5 inch of my Ally to my 4 inch screen on my Droid, I was able to actually do touchscreen a little better. So for me, in my experience, that kind of worked out. I don't want a 5.2-inch phone, but I can see how some people, again, who might have vision problems and don't want to use speech, could use that. That might work out better for them, and it's certainly probably a lot better than getting something huge like the Jitterbug or other phones that are like that. So I think to each his own, but making direct comparisons I still don't feel comfortable with, because there are just so many things about the platforms that are not comparable. You know, because you can't do some of the same things accessibility-wise on Android that you can with Apple. And to be fair, when I used Ice Cream Sandwich on my wife's phone, because that comes with it, not Jelly Bean just yet, the Jelly Bean upgrade is coming to the Galaxy 3, I tried to do iOS gestures just natively, and I got mad at myself.
You get used to it.
I got mad at myself because I've cried on this podcast time and time again. Don't do that. And I did what every other reviewer does. Oh, man, this is the hypocrisy podcast for me. This is I'm waiting for Twitter. This is, you know, important because I had to stop for a second, sit down, remember my ICS commands, and do what needs to be done in order to use that in the way that it had been designed, not to come and try and put a square peg in a round hole because I have iOS experience. So, again, it's tough. It really is. But it becomes what works best for you. And in some cases, as we've said on this program, your employer might make that decision for you. You might just come in one day and there's the box on your desk. And, hey, we traded out. And this is our new phone contract. And there you go. Hope you like this Android phone or BlackBerry or what
That's
have
right.
you. So sometimes it's not your decision.
And it is heartening to see Google having made vast improvements
with
Jelly Bean. You know, I don't mean to harp on this read from here command thing, though, but really, how has that not showed up ever? I mean, this is sort of like iOS not having copy-paste until
Steve
version
Nutt
3.
Kind of
point
addressed
whatever.
That
it's crazy.
In Twitter, and there are some ways to do it. It's just not something that you normally jump out to. And it again, is something that they can reiterate on. So if enough people ask Google Access or go to the Eyes Free lists, your comments will be heard, and things can happen really rapidly in Android. Now, the ecosystem being the other part of this, if you want a lot of apps that are, you know, more geared to the blind individual, like this app that we have here about finding relief areas, I think is very important because there aren't a lot of those types of apps in Android. There is not a bigger ecosystem for apps like Blindside or Papa Sangre or things like that. So if your decision is to go with the iPhone or the iPad because there's a lot of apps that are friendly to you, then that makes a lot of sense too, rather than comparing apples to Androids.
If I had the money right now, I would buy a Nexus 7 and a MacBook Air. I'm just saying. I would love to own both products. And
just
really,
to experiment.
Exactly. But I can remember.
Just to experiment, actually, to provide feedback, too.
Right. I remember Apple users saying, don't compare Apple to Windows. Don't do that. Don't compare Mac to Windows.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that's kind of what we're doing here in reverse. If we're not careful, we're looking at Windows 8 or Android doesn't behave like iOS.
Same thing's going to happen with Surface, you know. And it's hard to forget your first, right? It's hard to forget your first experience, especially if it was magical, if it's the first thing you've ever done. So if you've learned down arrow, any other commands or any other structure is not what you know, and you're going to be reticent to learn new commands. And the same thing's happening with touch. For some people, this is the first time doing touch. You know, I could have picked up my wife's phone and through a brain fart, maybe started doing my Palm OS commands because I've had a touchscreen Palm phone. Apple's not the first one to do a touch phone. But I didn't. I did iOS because I use my my iPad a lot. So it is very important to kind of put things where they belong and to look at things openly. But this this app, have you guys tried this app here about the relief animals and where to find things?
No, Mike sent this
not yet
to us, but it looks pretty cool. Where to Go, it's a phone app to help find relief areas in airports for dogs.
This is cool. My last flight, I only had 30 minutes to get from one flight to the other, so there would have been no time. But there are sometimes you're stuck in the airport for 3 hours and you would rather your companion, you know, be comfortable on the flight home. So finding this kind of thing is going to be great.
Well, speaking of finding things, if you're needing little GPS assistance, if you're interested in the Trekker Breeze, you can save $200 on it between now and August 31st. So you better jump on that and get that quickly. Well, let's open up the mailbag, shall we? It's a bit light this week, kind of like last week. We'll have to make sure it doesn't float away.
That's right. Everybody's, it's the end of summer. People are too, it's too hot to be calling in and saying blah, blah, blah about stuff.
Not that there's been a lot of stuff to blah, blah, blah about, except we did have a report about getting our podcast through various apps.
Good morning, all you people at Feral Talk, another great podcast. This is Diego from California, and I have to say, I listened to your podcast through iBlink Radio, and it was awesome. It was as good as it always is, but when I listened to it through my primary source, which is Downcast, it sounded like it had been recorded. I don't know. It just did not sound clear at all. Maybe it's a technical issue, or maybe my Downcast is completely broken. But I thought I'd just report it. Don't worry, I listened to the good version on my iBlink Radio, and it was an awesome podcast. Anyway, just thought I'd say that.
You know, it's been a while since I've listened to Sarah talk on and or on Downcast. For obvious reasons, I tend to hear it now before anyone else does.
This is true.
That's wonder why that would be.
I have no idea. No. He's actually tied to a chair and has to listen to EOL over and over and over. one of the joys of being the content director here at Sarah Tech is that Jamie has to be force-fed these podcasts. We do let him out occasionally. He does see the light of day, as he did at ACB, where we let him get out for a little bit. Then we quickly put him back underground and made him listen to four or five That Android shows, just to get him back in the mix. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, absolutely.
No, we didn't do that. Or if we did, he's remarkably sane.
This is true. Yeah. Well, no, that's why he wants the Nexus 7. We've made it subliminal.
Exactly.
It's
in,
it's in the background there. It's something Patrick puts in the background. When you listen to various podcasts, be it streams or others, you might have another player in the mix. So you might not be listening to the raw MP3, or you might be listening through another app doing a player to, for whatever reason. It's whatever the developer did. The MP3s, trust me, go through a loving care process between Derek and Patrick, who do amazing audio work on these very podcasts to make them sound as awesome as they possibly can. If you need a reference, always go back to the website. So you can go over to, say, serotalk.com or tripleclickhome.com, because that will give you the raw file. You can always listen to the file that's been finally polished and released. And we can't control the experience through other apps. So if you're having issues, you know, you might want to try some other podcast to see if it's just that player or if there's a problem with codecs on those devices. We actually had back in October some complaints that the podcast sounded echoey, and come to find out it was the 4S who had an audio problem. So it wasn't necessarily us.
That was fun.
Yeah.
But you can always get this podcast and others on iBlink Radio for your iOS or Android device. And speaking of iBlink Radio, we had a question about what happens if I'm on an iPad and I want to submit an iReport. You won't be using the feature in iBlink Radio to submit an iReport, but you can always make a voice recording and send that to resources@serotalk.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Very good. So again, we would love to hear from you. We appreciate all of the comments that we get. Go to serotalk.com, leave a comment on our blog. We have been getting some of those recently. We'll try to feature some stuff maybe in the next podcast. Leave an iReport on your iPhone or on your Android device. Go over to iTunes if you subscribe over there. Be sure and leave a review and rate our podcasts, all of them. Finally, if you want to use the good old-fashioned telephone, call 866-997-BLAB or 2522. We'd love to hear from you. It's time now for Roundabout. Now, I will admit, this first story, when I saw it, I had one thought in my mind, and then I had to do a paradigm shift. The state of Illinois allows many horses to be used as service animals. Well, my brain immediately went to Clydesdale, the biggest honking horse that exists.
Well, you are near the land of beers, so that makes a lot of sense. You know, every Christmas you probably get those trotted out in St. Louis. You know, we had a mission.
We had an interview.
Exactly. We had a mission to get someone on to talk about this. Michael Loff, actually, at ATIA, tracked down a guide horse user.
How interesting.
Yes, and she spoke about why she chose to use a guide horse rather than a dog. And there were a lot of good reasons for it. You know, the animal lives much longer. So imagine the bond that you have with your current service animal if you have one. And that could extend for quite some time. And you could improve as a partnership over time. And I think as much as 30 years, you could have this working animal. So very, very interesting. That can be found in the Serotalk archives. It was an ATIA interview. And now these horses are allowed as service animals in Illinois. And it doesn't necessarily have to be a guide horse. Or at least the article didn't say that.
Right.
This could be emotional support animal as well, or I'm not sure what else they're able to perform. But
That's like helper dogs. They are, where they're smaller dogs are not necessarily
a broad definition of service animal.
Yeah, and I think that's important too. Is the term accessibility is a very large term. It's overarching, and I have a tendency to say that it's more blind friendly or blind accessible, because there are certain things that we need or want or desire that is different than what someone with low vision or someone with a cognitive or deaf. And so it's service animal is another one of those statements that means something very directly to our community, but could be extended outwards to mean other things for inclusiveness.
What I'm curious about is these things are about between 70 and 100 pounds. Mm-hmm. And I have a dog who is about 80 pounds. And when I take him out, he goes under the table. Sometimes he sticks out slightly and I have to make him scrunch up a bit because he's very large. But with a horse, they don't typically lie down, naturally.
Stand next to a table, or they sleep standing up, I believe. Something that we might have to actually go back and listen to the interview again ourselves.
That's what I was just thinking.
So we'll stick in the show notes. But also, if you use a guide horse, let us know about it. It's really neat for people to tell us about how they approach things in mobility, and certainly with technology and all. And it's neat to think about how another way of doing things can be different than one that we might, usually or kind of accept. So especially if you guys have used one versus the other, if you transitioned from, let's say, a service animal canine to a horse, I'd really like to learn more about that.
And if you use a Clydesdale, we want to know how you do that too.
That's right. That's awesome.
That dude doesn't lay under the table, I guarantee you.
For the blind.
Well, the London Olympics are over, Jamie. I'm sorry.
I know. But you know what? The Paralympics are coming.
Oh.
And the 2012 Paralympics. We have a link here to a YouTube piece from RNIB. This is Isabel's story. She is became blind later in life. And tells her story a little bit about that transition. And she's a dancer, apparently. And that's what she's going to do in this Olympics. I forget when this is. Do you know, Ricky, when the...
I want to say it's next week, isn't it?
Oh, is it soon? Okay.
It's very... it's really probably soon. As you hear this podcast as we release it. So, and I believe Channel 4 in Britain is airing some... of the Paralympic Games, there are going to be some places that will probably have some video of it as it goes. Certainly, it's not to the level of the London Olympic Games, you know. But right. There is actually a lot of media coming out of London about said games. So, if you're interested, you can learn more about that by clicking on this article in the show notes. And following some of the links within the article to learn more about the Paralympic Games. And my hat is off to all of you because I am very lazy. And I think it's very awesome that you guys have the ability to do many of these things because, wow, there's just some really neat, fantastic, you know, medal winning competitions here. And I'm not sure which one, if I did have to choose, I'm not sure which one I would go after because I'd probably stink at all of them equally. Is there one, you know, particular thing you think you could do, Jamie, Ricky, if we send you to training tomorrow?
Do they have one where you shake ranch bottles? Oh, so it's like the ranch bottle shaking
salad preparation, you know?
I would rock at that.
I will enroll in the podcast listening category.
Oh,
I will do a marathon.
Ooh, good one. Ooh, how about book reading?
You would read it. You would rock at speed reading, being that you're 220 plus a minute. You are just speed typing on the iPhone.
Yeah.
Crazy lady
there. That's a good one. Yeah. That would be a good great one, actually. Olympic sport.
And that's before Flexi.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. No, you head it down.
Flexi would be considered like the performance enhancing.
The steroid of the Paralympic Games. I don't know that Flexi's going to like that I just said that, but there you go. Bye, Flexi, the steroid of the Paralympic Games. That's a wonderful byline. I can't wait to see that in the iStore.
Well, that's all right. So, somebody this morning was trying to type. I've joined the Flexi typists, and it predicted priests. Speaking of the Rush song. You know, we are the priests
of the temple of Flexi. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow. 2112. Go read Ready Player One by Ernest Cline, guys. That's a great, great, great book.
That's right.
So if you excel at a certain Paralympic event, we'd like to know about that. What's your best time and what do you think you could do? Or, you know, like underwater basket weaving, give us an event that you think you would be really good at. That I'm really interested now. To see what our
bacon
audience
craft.
Speed baking.
Speed bacon. Hover bacon.
There you go. Exactly. There are all sorts of stuff out there. And again, hopefully the mainstream technology world will have more news for us next week to comment on. And you can rest assured that we will find some way to at least kill an hour of your day. So... Thank you.
And what are you doing next week, Joe? You're not going to be here.
I will not be here. I'm actually going to be on the sunny beach in Galveston. And while some people might think that's vacation, no, actually, I'm going to be there with Richard Wells from Sarotech covering the Blinded Veterans Association convention. There are a lot of vendors there and some wonderful conversations that are going to happen. And we'll be archiving some of those materials for the BVA. and possibly even releasing them as Cerro Talk convention specials. You thought we were done with all the summer shows. Surprise!
Think again. That's right.
So it interviews never ends. From some of our favorites and yeah, some new ideas on what's going on, and especially some content that is going to be very interesting for our veteran community, as well as, of course, you can get to a lot of this content through our SAM Vets program, another link in the show notes. So if you are a blinded veteran, you could get System Access Mobile Network, and you can learn about the details right there on cerotalk.com.
See, we did end on a positive note this week. A very positive note.
That's right. I'm happy about that.
Me too. Well, thank you all for listening. I'm glad you stuck around and listened, and we'll be looking forward to your comments. Be sure and leave iReports, call the Blab Line, or go to the blog and leave comments there. Until next time, have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Cerotalk. Visit us at www.cerotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@cerotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life. We'll